Welcome to the Define Feminine podcast. Today, I have my special guest, Key.
So, my actual name is Kiera.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. I know, so
everybody,
right?
Everybody just call you Key.
When I was growing up, people called me Kiki. But it was so childish to a point.
Yeah.
So then my friends, like maybe around like middle school, started calling me Key. And yeah. It just stuck. Everyone calls me that.
So like literally we were on Instagram for a while.
Yes.
And I've been watching. Well, first of all, let's just go all the way back.
Word.
On where we met. So at this point, we done became whole different people at this point. So we met because of someone else through another friend that's from our hometown, Mount Vernon. Mm-hmm. And I just remember one day I was in Grand Central and I seen you and I was like, wait, I know you.
Right? I don't even remember. Really? I swear my mind is like, I swear, okay. That's why I'm like, I'm listening to you. I'm like, hopefully she'll be able to jog my memory.
Yo, yeah.
I don't remember. I can't even remember the first day that we met. I literally can't remember.
Yeah, it was a quick
interaction.
Okay. Like, oh my god, yeah. And we spoke for a little bit, but we were trying to run for our train. You know, life is like you don't really have time to talk like that.
Not at all. Like,
Mount Vernon is a really small town in Westchester.
Yes.
How was your experience there? Because mine was very different.
I feel like I've been born and raised. And my whole family is from Mount Vernon. Like I think the only generation that lived down south, because my family, we're like blackity blacks, so we from the south.
Okay.
And like I think the last generation that moved to New York was like my great grandmother. Oh. So my mom's mom.
Uh-huh.
And we've been in Mount Vernon for so long. And honestly, like growing up in Mount Vernon, I didn't realize how it impacted me until I moved to Yonkers.
Yeah.
And I was like in high school. Yeah. I moved to Yonkers in high school. So like obviously me being born to about like ninth grade, I was in stomach is growling, my bad. I lived there for so long and I never realized how, when you really are from like a small town, like how that actually like affects the way that you kind of like go about dealing with community, one, and then two, like just like the people, like you know everyone, like everyone knows you. And my family is like really, really big. So like everyone knows like my older cousins and like my, you know, the cousins right before me and stuff. So like, you know, you're growing up and it's like, you got people talking to you, acting like they know you.
Yeah.
You know, you're dealing with beef that came from your family members. Oh. Like I had experiences where like people didn't like, you know, like my cousins, like some of my other cousins. And then like that trickled on to me growing up. Mm-hmm. I just remember like, but I do, one thing that I do love and what I've always loved about Mount Vernon is that like, it's so much history that comes from Mount Vernon. Like people don't know, like it's so many people. We have so many greats. I mean, from Denzel to Felicia Rashad to Slick.
You know what's funny?
You're good.
I was sitting in CVS one year and Felicia Rashad was sitting right next to me. Mm-hmm. And I was so young. Where I could not, like, you know, when you see someone, you're like, yo, I remember you from
somewhere. I remember you from somewhere.
And she just kept giggling. And I'm like, yo, mom, I know her. And my mom was like, yeah, come, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that's really her. Because I ended up Googling it after. I was like, oh, that's really her.
Yeah. It's funny. My dad worked at Lord and Taylor, like when I was in elementary school. Uh-huh. It was a Lord and Taylor.
That's a
exactly
TV
that's
point.
A throwback, girl. Yeah. So the Lord and Taylor on Route 22, if you're not familiar with, you know,
is that large
Chester? I think that's considered East Chester.
Okay, yes.
East Chester.
Yeah.
And my dad worked there and she came in one day and like gave my dad an autograph. He brought it home to me.
Yeah.
When I was like really, really young, I met I met Denzel. One time when I was young, I was like in elementary school still.
Wait, he's from Mount Vernon?
Yeah, he's from Mount Vernon. Oh. Yeah, he's from Neville. Mm-hmm. Wow. It's funny because my grandmother loved Denzel, which is crazy. But
yeah, of course.
His grandmother, my mom and my grandmother knew them. Like, wow. And even DMX, even though he's from Yonkers, I met him when I was younger because of his course. Aunt used to live in Mount Vernon and she took care of me. Mm-hmm. I think like there was some time I remember my aunt was telling me like Heavy D used to have a crush on my aunt. Like a lot of like people that come from there. And that's always something that I've just like loved about it because like it's such a small, it's 4 square miles each way.
And that live there.
There's so many people that live there. Like crazy. The population is crazy.
Yeah.
It just became like really, really like a lack of community. Cause before it was, it like, you know, you could go down the block and like, you know, like, oh, that's so-and-so's family and they know your family because they done raised this person, da 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 da. Where then it became where people were closing their doors, the people wasn't doing like trick-or-treating no more or none of that kind of stuff because it just really got violent. Like it really got, it was a weird shift because it's like I'm in middle school and I think I'm like, what, maybe 13 or 14?
Right,
And I'm able to like identify the that there is a transition between like just how people kind of just react to each other. Cause before, like I said, it felt like community.
Yeah.
And then that changed so drastically. Oh my God. And then
that's so scary.
I didn't realize, like I said, until I got out of middle school, going into high school, moving to Yonkers, one, not realizing like Mount Vernon is it's so many Black people in Mount Vernon.
Yeah, yeah.
So many Black people. And I mean like from, you know, you're poor to you're super rich to rich. Like, and, you know, it's crazy because when I moved to Yonkers, there was a lot of Hispanic people.
Yes.
There were a lot of like Italian, even though Mount Vernon does have a big Italian community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's more Caribbean.
It's more Caribbean, more just like regular Black people. Like,
right.
And when I moved to Yonkers, like I had to get used to like, I almost had like a little fake culture shock because I'm meeting like these, I never knew before this time that there was like a divide between Hispanic and Black people. I never knew that to be anything. Cause my mother grew us up very like pro-Black, very pro-Black, very like, you know, confident. And then that's all we were around. So there was never any other thought of, you know, any kind of other people, I guess, which is in a way a little ignorant, but that's just how it was.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure in other cultures, they feel the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Cause that's all I was used to. I was always used to Caribbeans, Jamaicans, majority lived in Mount Vernon. Mm-hmm. So I always had, since I've been growing up, always had Jamaican friends, like, always like, and like getting adapted into like, not, I always say like, I was baptized in curry. And that's where I get my Caribbean.
So you're not West Indian.
Mm-mm.
But you see, that's the beautiful thing about being from New York. We're so integrated where we develop like an understanding of so many different cultures to the point where you kind of Puerto Rican, you kind of Dominican, you kind of New York. Like New York is its own culture. So it's like
own thing. And that's like the part that I love about just New York in general, but like living in like that area, then it made me more like aware. Cause then, you know, I had that phase when I did think like, oh yeah, I'm Puerto Rican or, you know, that's what my edges.
You was using the Black gel.
I was using the Black gel.
Yo, because I was beasted. Remember when we used to use the toothbrush with the water?
Girl.
I don't know if I was the only one doing that, but
we was all doing it. It was not just you before they made all these little tools to lay your edges, toothbrush. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because the cool thing also about learning about so many different cultures too, my dad is from the Bronx. So, you know, born and raised, he's super Bronx, like Gun Hill, like he is very Bronx.
Yeah.
And he used to have us like, you know, so I spent a lot of time like in between like, you know, holidays or just like the summer in the Bronx, as well as I was in Mount Vernon
and Yonkers and shit.
Mm-hmm. And in Yonkers. So it was always just, I was very blessed enough to like kind of be surrounded by so many different cultures, so many different people growing up. But it wasn't until I got to Yonkers where I realized there was like this divide between Hispanic people and Black people, or, you know, even having Spanish people say the word, the N-word. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah, that's very normal in New York.
The first time that I heard that, I almost fought. I almost literally fought this girl because I was like, yo, what? Excuse me? Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until like everybody else was like saying it, and it was just like a part of like that. And I'm just like I said, growing up in like this super pro Black home, I was not used to that. Like, I remember going home telling my mother, like, yo, ma, they in the school saying this, and they think they Black. And then that's when she kind of taught me, like, Dominicans, especially, they come from an Afro, like, you know,
even though they don't always think that.
They don't always think that. That's and that's something that I had to learn in school too, growing up in Yonkers, like going through high school in Yonkers, because there was such that divide. And then there was some girls that were like very much so would tell me, like, oh yeah, you're pretty for a Black girl.
Oh, and so me, you not actually knowing, got that.
Yeah. Wow. Me not understanding, like, I'm pretty for a Black girl. Like, what does that mean? And then like, then understanding and ripping of the layers of like how, like, you know, just how Dominicans, especially, because it's really more so Dominicans than Dominicans, it is like Puerto Ricans, but just how Dominicans treat Black or just darker skinned people in general, even their own people, you know? And that was like definitely a learning process, because I remember feeling like, at some point, inadequate, which was weird because I had never felt that way before. Never felt like I was misplaced or that I was like not that I wasn't like, I guess you could say like not the popping kind of person or like the type of girl that other people would want to be around and stuff like that, because it was all about. And then you had the Black girls, because there were the Spanish girls that, you know, they were the popping ones, or they were the ones that people wanted to seek out or whatever. They were kind of like play their own Blackness and be like, you know, try to make it seem like, oh no, we don't want to hang out with these kind of Black girls or those kind of Black girls. We can only hang out with this certain type of Black girl, because those are the only girls that are going to be accepted by the Spanish girls. And it was weird.
Yeah, that's very
It was very weird. And then I think maybe somewhere around like 10th and 11th grade, I started meet more people like of my tribe, people that was kind of more like me. And and we kind of, and then I started realizing how, you know, there was actually a large community of people, like Black and Hispanic girls who, or just people in general, that, you know, were more so like, nah, we not on none of that. Like, we all Black at the end of the day. Like, my father looked like you. My skin is as dark. My aunt's skin is as dark as you. Like, we, you know, and I started meeting Africans. That was the fun part about moving to Yonkers too, because that's the community in my running that we don't really have.
You don't have much.
Is like African community, and like there's so many Africans in Yonkers.
Really?
And that was interesting, because that's when I kind of met that whole, you know, like I said, growing up pro-Black home, my mom is teaching me about Black, you know, Blackness in America, but now learning about Blackness coming from their culture, because a lot of people, a lot of the Africans that I knew either were the first generation born here, or their parents had like moved them here when they were like eight or something.
So they already adapted to the American culture.
And that was like, that was interesting to like, you know, learning about, you know, Nigeria and like just all different places. Like, I had friends from all different places, which was really cool.
I love that. I feel like it's important to be able to like get to know how people identify themselves, because you could be very sheltered. Like, I mostly grew up in Mount Vernon, but also the Bronx. I moved a lot. Bronx, New Rochelle. So like, these experiences that you're having, I had like milder, like less intense experiences, but it's, you still seen it in some points. Like,
yeah, even,
like moving from New Rochelle to the Bronx was the most treacherous
experience. I know that had to be a culture shock.
Girl, I got bullied so bad.
I bet.
I'm like, oh, Black girls are mean.
They
are so mean.
We don't talk about, and I feel like we don't talk about that enough, like how I think, like, you know, because it's like, you know, we're older now. So it's like, you know, certain things that did happen then. It's like, okay, we know, we was people just being kids. Everybody just wanted to fit in and be popular and all that kind of stuff. But don't really I don't feel like enough people talk about like the trauma of like how Black girls were really mean to other Black girls for like no reason.
It's usually over. It's usually over a nigga.
Always
how you dress, how your hair.
If your hair was longer, that was that shit my is thing.
Crazy. Yeah. So it's tough going to school and like being in certain environments. It's, I don't know. You have sisters and brothers?
I have one sister. My sister's 8 years older than me, and then I have a younger brother. He's 1 year younger than me.
Oh, so you don't have no one close to you?
Mm-mm, never did. I always just had my best friends. That's another thing too. Like when you grow up with siblings that are so like different, because I actually didn't meet my brother until I was about like 10 or 11 years old. I didn't even know I had a brother until about that time. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah, of course.
But you know, my sister being so much older, like I really gravitated towards my friends being like my sisters, being like my, that's why I had such, like growing up, I had friendships that were like so strong and like so like deep, because I literally used them as like my siblings. If they had siblings themselves, I would be like, nope, that's my sibling. Like, that's my sister. Like, that's my, you know.
So you pretty much grew up like an only child.
In a way.
Yeah.
It's funny because my sister, we was, you know, my birthday just passed. And thank you. And my sister, I just turned 27. And my sister is, we're 8 years apart. My sister just turned, she'll be 35 this year.
Okay.
In August. And we were just talking about that at dinner. It was just like, you know, like, my friends were there and they were like, yo, you know, telling my sister, it was like, yo, Callie, like, you must never used to talk to Kiara when y'all was younger, because this girl can talk. You can tell like she like an only child almost. And my sister's like, yeah, we didn't have much to talk. Like, I'm like in elementary school, my sister's going into high school.
Yeah.
You know, like it's it was completely day and night. So yeah, it was almost like an only child kind of situation, because my sister definitely didn't. And we, and not only was our age difference so big, but we were very polar, like, my sister was a sneakerhead. She was kind of like a tomboy. She was into video games growing up. She was like very into tech. Like, she loved tech stuff. And like, I was like super girly, loved Barbie dolls and loved, you know, getting dressed up, playing dress up and stuff like that. So like, it was just very, very opposite. We didn't have much in common, like for real, for a very, very long time. I think maybe just until we started becoming like adults, like until I became like 23, we just started having things in common, like just started.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a weird dynamic growing up, you know, having a sibling there, but then like, not really.
Yeah. You kind of had to like step into yourself to really understand her as a woman more so than I can see that.
Cause I was and always just tough. Like the annoying little sister to her, you know? So she never really seen me as more than just my little sister, my kid sister, you know? And even sometimes to this day, she calls me kiddo, like, you know, cause LOL. she calls me baby. Like, she'll talk to me like that because she just so used to it. Cause it was almost like I was her baby. She helped me grow up for real. Like, you know, so yeah.
So speaking of that, so you know the name of the podcast is Define Feminine, right?
Yes.
So like, would you say your sister is the one that helped you to step into your feminine? Like, who would be that person that you would add that, like, give that attribute to?
I have to give that to, so it's gone in different phases.
Yes, of course.
So when I was a kid, the person that I looked up to as that with that feminine energy was my mom.
Yeah.
My mom is a very much so like, just very sensual, loves her lipstick, loves her makeup, always loves, my mom has, I swear, I always say that my mom's heel collection is going to be worth a billion dollars one day, because she always had shoes like in every color, like every kind of shoes. My mom worked in corporate, so she always was like really dressed up, always had her really cute outfits on. So I always wanted to be like my mom. That's how I like, when I first started getting into like makeup and first started like, you know, when it comes to dolls and stuff, how I would play with dolls, I would emulate my mom.
Yeah.
And then I want to say when I kind of got to like middle school, I was living with my aunt at this time. Me, my mom, my sister were living with my aunt, and my aunt, she always was like you know how you always have that one aunt that's just like mad fun, like they just they crazy, they fun, they just always doing like whatever they want to do because they ain't got no kids.
Oh, she the auntie with no kids.
Auntie with no kids. So like she just always was just like spunky, like she had like red, like bright red dreads. My aunt used to just like she does hair. My aunt always did hair. I also grew up in a shop, like I grew up in the shop. So that was also another way that I feel like my aunt really kind of like, I really always tried to emulate my aunt because I wanted to be like that.
Yeah,
you go to the shop, all the ladies is coming to her getting their hair done. They talking, they having this conversation, stuff that I don't even know what they're talking about. She just always seemed so cool to me, so I was like, I want to be like that. And then that was like from like middle school, like into high school. And then I want to say like going out of high school, it kind of became the era of YouTube. So I kind of was getting like, you know, the Jackie Inas and like the what's her name? I can't even think of her name right now, but like just a lot of different like influencers who I really like started to like, okay, yeah, this is where I'm going to, this is how I'm going to like be, like how I'm going to be as a girl and how I'm going to want to show up as a woman. And that was definitely funny times because you realize the difference between you trying to emulate people that you actually know and the difference between emulating people who you don't know that you just get to see one side from. And it's like, okay, I know how to be pretty. I know how to curl my hair. I know how to lay my edges. I know how to do this. But I don't really know how to be a woman. Like, I don't know how to be womanly through them. You know, because they're not showing that. At that time, it was just all about makeup and hair. You know, like on YouTube. The
exterior.
The exterior stuff. And it wasn't really teaching you how to be, you know, to show up as the woman that you want to be, whatever that means. And then just also just how to show up just as a person in general, you know? So that was interesting.
I love that. I think it's important to be able to have those inspirations so that you can kind of define your own image or experience as a woman, because it does change. It's never going to be one size fits all. So I think it's cool to be able to have something to work from, because a lot of women don't have that. You know?
Do you feel like, because I mean, like we grew up in the same era. So it's like, do you feel like that, like at some point you started to feel like that, like the mold of like being girly or being feminine was that, like, was the, what was we seeing on like the social, like not social media yet, but like YouTube more so?
I think it's, I think we're now stepping into a time where we're nurturing the feminine by speaking up. Like before, it was very much so, like you said, the makeup, the hair, you know, everybody's doing the hauls and showing off the bags. But like now we're talking about speaking up for ourselves. Now we're talking about, you know, vetting out the right men. Now we're talking about vetting out the right friends. Like all of that plays into like the femininity and being able to like nurture that and honor that. So that you're not always being, not having to be so masculine all the time. I think I spent a good majority of my life being masculine. And I didn't even think that. I thought that I was being feminine. I'm like, no, bitch, you stupid. You're dumb. That's really what it is. You feel me? So like now it's just like, now I can, you know, embrace what we call the soft life now.
The soft life. I'm still trying to, I think for me in my mind, I'm still trying to wrap around what that means for me. Because I get what it means. I get it. But I'm trying to, like, I'm trying to figure out what that means for me and like how I can show up more just like easygoing and just more like, you know, just more free and like, you know, and not feeling like I have to put the weight of everything on my shoulders. Because, and I think the reason I'm having that, the hard time kind of figuring that out or understanding the balance or what that means for me, is because I'm still in this like grind mode. I'm still in this energy right now where I'm like, you know, I gotta, you know, I have a business. I'm trying to get that to be elevated. You know, I'm in my career. I'm trying to get that to be, you know, get myself and my career to be a weird point that I feel comfortable at. And I still feel like I have so much like, so much more hustle, so much more like that energy, I guess that masculine energy in me, that I'm still like, damn, like, I don't even know how. Like, I mean, yes, I love taking baths. I love self-care. Like, I'm a self-care queen, love self-care. But it's like, that I feel like I don't know how to spread that over all my life. Like I know how to just keep it in one little area and not really like through, like even in my relationship, sometimes I can come off a little masculine. Even when it just comes to just like work and stuff like that, it's just like this energy that I'm trying to learn how to balance, because I do feel, and it's weird, and I don't know if you can relate to this, but like when you were in that masculine energy, like you feel like a loss, a little bit of something, like you're not feeling complete, like you're not having like your,
because you know you're going in the wrong, like you're going in the wrong direction, and you know that.
And that's and that's how lately I've been feeling like, yo, like I really just want to be like, that's why I've been trying to take it more easy, kind of trying to just be more like another thing that I'm finding. And just like really like because I got in grind mode so much that I was neglecting my nails, my hair, like
your nails look mad good. I'm trying to look at you, but she just said like I can't even focus. I love
thank you but yeah, just trying to do, and like things like this, even because like at one point I was like, you know, trying to just do like one color and like just do, and then like I'm like, no, like I love patterns and I love flowers, and it's okay. I like butterflies. It's okay to be girly. Like it's okay to be that, because I am that. I am that. It's just tapping that tap, because that's who I was when I was a kid. That's what I that's what I'm innately, you know, used to. And it's like tapping back into that energy. And it's been a little journey, but I'm getting there. I'm finding, I'm still trying to find that balance. So
you just have to give yourself some grace and also ask for help.
That has been, girl, like help, asking for help. I'm sorry.
It sounds so simple, but I know you don't have.
Crazy that, but it, cause it's like before, like asking for help felt like, honestly to me, I'd rather like mop the bottom of the ocean than ask for help. Like that's how bad it was for me at one point. Like I really had to get used to being like, yo, I can't do this. I can't do all of this. Like, I could put on my cape and put the whole world on my shoulder, you know, and put on my Tim's facts, put on my Tim's and like get out here and get it popping. But no, like asking for help and like feeling comfortable with the people over. And I think that was maybe a big thing before, is that I didn't feel comfortable with asking the people I was around at one point for help. Because I grew up, you know, unfortunately, you know, my mom and my sister, you know, they tried, I think, you know, when I look in retrospect at it now, like, I really think that they wanted me to have a layer of tough skin, because when I was young, I was very, like, any little thing bothered me. I was very timid, very, like, you know. But I think that at some point it kind of got like misconstrued, like in their teaching of like, you know, how they was teaching me to grow up, because there would be times where like, you know, I'm young, I'm 16, I'm 15 years old. I need to, I'm making mistakes that I need to lean on my family for, or, you know, the only people that I can trust to lean on. And they kind of made, like, they would kind of throw it in my face. And that kind of like really fucked with me like a lot, because it was like, well, if my own family's gonna do that, I already know how people, that's not my family, gonna do me. So I would never ask for help. I would never make people think that I needed them, that I was like, that I was like, you know, I was just, I was gonna be the person everyone could come to. I was never gonna be the person that I I needed someone, or I needed, I was the one that was giving the advice. I was the one that was protecting, being the mother figure of everybody, of my friends. And you know, now being in a space where I have my circle of friends that I love, these like my sisters, and, you know, having, you know, my man, and just, and having like an opportunity to feel like, oh no, I'm safe here. Like I'm safe to ask for help here. And that has been like tremendously like helping me with that journey to the soft life. Like, because like, I really like 6 years ago, 3 years ago, even, because even in COVID, that was a process for me to relinquish like You can't do
that nothing. Old version of you. Yeah.
You can't do nothing more. You have to let that part of you go and enjoy this new part of you. This new part of you likes to be, likes help, likes to help and not feel like, I got to help people just so I can keep up with this exterior, this person that I'm creating. Right. And I'm just like, you know, just now being able to understand like the help thing has very, very much so like worked tremendously on my self-esteem, on my anxiety, on everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
So I really want to talk about attachment styles. It's something that we all have due to how we raised, how we define, you know, relationships, how we view them. So based on your perception of your attachment, first of all, when you first meet someone, like what is the first thing you do that makes you, or what's the first thing that they can do that can make you feel comfortable, like offer it?
I think when I meet someone, the first thing that they do that makes me feel comfortable is if they have a sense of humor. Yeah. Like if they have any kind, like even if they make like the littlest joke, like I'm like, okay, I can talk to you because you have, you're down to earth. That's kind of like what I'm looking for when I feel like,
like when you're trying to connect with somebody.
Yeah. Like I need you to, because like I've met people who are like very,
That's what I'll be saying. I'm like, yeah, she's a little stiff. But okay.
Yeah, like she just giving like, like, word. Girl, loosen up. Like, let me let them shoulders move. Like, I need to know that you, because I feel like if I'm dealing with someone that is like a little too stiff, then I can't be my full self because I'm always, because I'm also like an empath in that way where I'm like. Yeah. I don't want you to feel like you're uncomfortable. I don't want you to be uncomfortable. I'd rather be uncomfortable before you are uncomfortable.
When it comes down to like relationships, like I know like the most common conversation is what's your type? But like from like a general point of view, what is your ideal partner? Because I don't really like to say man or nigga. Yeah. I mean, that's how we talk in conversation.
But of course.
Like what is, because partnership is the main thing. That's that's the main reason why you're there.
Exactly. So
like, what do you look for in your partner?
I think the main thing, I love people who are like very driven. Like you just have like ambition. It just like drips off of you. I love people who are very like they solution. Like they're gonna figure it out. Like. People, I feel that I have to worry. I worry about people who I feel do not have like the level of endurance and the natural instinct. Exactly. Like I worry. Like I'm like, oh my god. I feel like you're a little baby. Like oh, like you know, like I gotta lead you into the right
thing. Right.
And I really like people who are like honest. Like I love like people. Like it may be a little like. Rude to come off a little bit sometimes because they're so blunt.
Yeah.
But I love that energy because I can't be around no fake shit. It don't feel good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's really and then someone who's like just very like helpful, like kind. Yes.
Like he takes the initiative to help.
Yeah, like you're gonna do the things that I need you to do, like regardless, because my number one love language is acts of services.
Yeah.
So like anyone that's gonna just like do it, like they know, like I've been complaining about it. They see me done stressed out, and they just like, oh yeah, nah, I did that for you.
Yeah. You ready? Handled it. All right. Okay, sir.
Legs wide open.
Word. No, I feel you on that. Yeah.
I love
it's
that.
Not attractive. Like, yeah.
Super attractive. Like that. And like I feel like that's and even though like we were going back to like about the masculine feminine energy, like I feel like that's a masculine trait. A man, like I think masculine energy comes with like just that assertiveness of just getting things done.
Yeah.
And that just cool girl.
It's nice. It's very nice. Like reassuring. You could actually like, you don't have to be so tense.
Yeah. And like, I hate to feel like I'm I don't, even though I am very independent and I'm very strong, yeah. I don't like to feel like I'm kind of like overbearing to someone. Mm-hmm. You know?
Didn't I tell you? Like every second.
Yeah, like every second. I don't want to, because then I feel like, now I feel like I'm your mother. And now I'm dry. Yeah. I don't need, when I gotta start feeling like I'm your mom, or I have to nag you to do things. Mm-hmm. It's slow like that. And men sometimes they be so like, you know, I identify as, you know, heterosexual. So I'm talking about men.
Men.
Mm-hmm. And you know, men sometimes can be very like, sometimes they be like very needy, and they don't realize they're needy, and then you have to get into that little mode of being like, bro, you need to do what you need to do, like right now, that you don't need to worry about that. And sometimes that I balance with that sometimes too, because it's a difference between like telling someone what they need to do and what you need from them, and then nagging them. And I don't want to get into the nagging
category. Yeah. Don't you feel like when you have to do that, like it's a clear indication that the person is not really into you, or is that too like, is so that extreme?
I think for me personally, it's a little extreme.
Okay.
But I get it. Yeah, I get why people feel that way.
Yeah.
I think I have a lot of, I give people a lot of room, like a lot of just room to kind of like
redeem themselves,
show themselves, you know, whatever. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I think that I have a lot of friends that are very like cold cut.
Yes.
Oh, he didn't text me back. Oh, he not into me. Bye. Next. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, girl, maybe he was with his mom. Maybe he had to go take something to the grocery. Like, you know,
people are not always so attached.
So that's something that's for me, I'm like, nah, I don't really feel that way, but I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it for sure.
Yeah. So when did you, because this all ties into like, you know, attachment styles. I had, you know, topics about like the love language and like, you know, how important reciprocity is. I feel like you already touched on that. Like, like how does that play out? Like even in friendships, because a lot of times we like romanticize and only speak about male interactions, but like the friendships are very important. Like what was your experience with reciprocity in your friendships?
Oh my gosh. Like, I've been through so many friends. That's one thing. Like, I've had a lot of friends.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I don't really like to use that term too loosely, because I've really had like some real friends that were really, like really
sleepovers
close.
And sleepovers.
I'm helping your mom do something that you probably should have been doing with your mother. Yes. Like that deep. So I have to, you know, be respectful in that sense. But I feel like a lot of the times in my relationships, I've dealt with people who have had a very different background than me. Mm-hmm. Some of my friends, you know, back in the day had both of their parents, both of, you know,
in the home.
Yeah. Let me clarify that, in the home. Cause I have, you know, my dad is, you know, my dad is in my life, mm-hmm. but, you know, just, they had a different upbringing, whether they maybe were on a different financial situation than maybe my mom or my dad were, or, you know, just having that, they, you know, like some families are like the head of their whole family.
Yes.
And so like their dynamics with how they deal with family and friends is like very like different than like how I was brought up.
Like you would prioritize your friendships more because you didn't have that family dynamic in the home.
In the home. Right. So dealing with people, I would expect more from them than I probably should have expected if I was just their friend.
Right.
And I didn't see the difference between that. I felt like if I spend all this time with you and I love you, you're my family automatically. Right. Like it was never a thought to me. So I felt like the same way that I need my family to show up for me, you should be showing up for me. But that's not
it doesn't always work out that way.
It don't work out that way. In the beginning, it was a lot of that in my early like friendships and stuff. But I think now the way that I've curated the people that I have in my life, mm-hmm. it's like, we just know what we need from each other. we know we need from each other. And then we also are able to just like communicate it in a way that we both can understand. Like, because we do come from the same kind of background, because we do understand that family may not be, you know, the cookie cutter way that family looks. Yes. And like we on are TV. Family on right. TV or whatever. Yeah. And we are family, and how I need you to show up for me because you are really all I got, you know? So yeah, the reciprocity in my relationships have changed, and what I've wanted from my friendships have changed throughout the years. But I'm very more comfortable where I'm at now, because I'm not, I felt like before I was begging people to be something to me that I had to realize it, I couldn't get that from them. I had to deal with that in mind. That was some inner shit that I had to deal with my family, you know, and it just wasn't, their right, or not even their right. It wasn't their part to be that void, to fill that void. It just wasn't.
It's one of those things where certain people have a certain cap in terms of how much love they can provide for you. Because in their head, they have like different, like we have files. Like, okay, I'm gonna give this bitch 10. I'm gonna give this nigga 50.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm gonna give my mom 20, my dad 5. You understand? Five. Like it's usually 5, okay?
It's usually like, 5, but
So it's like, and then when you realize that people are programmed very differently based on what they, their privilege is, because it is a privilege to have a normal family dynamic. And my personal thing with that, because I could definitely resonate with that, is when people see you in those type of situations, because certain people lack a certain level of self-awareness, they're not able to provide you that level of love. And it does suck. It's somewhat like a heartbreak, because it's like, bitch, you know that I come from a broken home.
OD.
You know, and you don't have to deal with that. All I'm asking for is to be there for me.
That's it.
And it's hard to say that to people that don't get that.
Who don't get it.
Yeah.
Because the whole time they're just thinking like, oh, well, like me and my family get into arguments. It's cool. Girl, you and your family get into arguing. Your mother didn't kick you out.
Right. Yeah.
You have a place to live. Your mother didn't decide like, oh, today, Tuesday at 3 o'clock, you need to get the fuck out of my crib. Yep. And I don't care where you going. I don't care who, figure it out. That's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. So what I need from you, I know you and your mother might have like arguments and tips and tats and back and forth and stuff, but like, that's not this. And I need you right now. And It was just a lot of learning that, like, you know, one, you need yourself.
Yeah. Most important.
First and foremost, you just need yourself.
Yeah.
And then secondly, it's releasing that energy of like someone has to
codependency.
Codependency. Yeah.
It's a codependency. You know where it comes from? I was watching a video earlier this week, and it was talking about friendships and like how we grew up seeing As Told by Ginger and Mean Girls, even though Mean Girls is probably not the best example.
But I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like fucking Zoe 101. Like all of these shows where it's like, we went to prom, then we went to college, then we, you know, we had babies together, even all grown up, like the Rugrats. Like we see all of these friendships develop, and everybody stuck together
through years.
And it's not like
that's not real.
That's not real.
And that's crazy that you even make that point, because at some point I thought that was real. Like you couldn't tell me back when I was 14, you couldn't tell me all my friends who wasn't my friends were not about to be my friends now.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't tell me, like, I knew we were gonna grow old together. All of our kids were gonna grow up together. We was gonna be in each other's weddings, all of that. And that's just not how it is in reality, because like you realize how different life shapes everybody.
Yes.
And it just everybody has to go on their own path.
Yeah. It does suck. It's a harsh reality, but I think you just being able to get to a point where you can understand yourself. And like everyone has different battles, right? So like I feel like God in like specifically God places you by yourself so that you can understand that's all that you need,
girl.
Because like in the moment you're like, damn, I don't got nobody, feel not alone. And you may have people around you, but they're not gonna understand how you're feeling in the moment, because you have so many layers of yourself, you know.
Yes.
So it's tough, you know. But I think it's necessary to be able to like go through those changes. Cause like, likewise, I've been through a lot of friendships.
Yeah.
A lot of people that I thought were friends, a lot mm-hmm. of people that were secret haters, as we like to say. Okay. Yep. A lot of people that were just bystanders. And I'm like, damn, like I knew a lot of people and they're useless.
Yeah. And that, yo, that feeling be making, I don't know about you, but
crazy.
That made me feel crazy. Yeah. Like, yo. Yeah. Because then I'm thinking like, is it me?
Mm-hmm.
Am I the reason why I'm attracting these kind of people?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, nah, I can't blame that on me. Like, no. I can't blame not all of it anyway. Like, no. I can't blame all of it on me because people will come into your life and be one way and then when certain life things happen, you see them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see like, them.
Clear as day.
Like, clear. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, nah. Mm-mm, that wasn't me. I don't know who sent you, but that wasn't my God. Ain't sent you. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And then again, maybe they did teach me never to be around nobody like you,
right?
You know, because that's something too. I'm just like I'm so grateful that we had opportunity to do this because you know we was working against like all these different schedules, time zone. Like
adulting is tough.
It's tough, and it's like you think you're ready to, and it's like, girl, I'm so exhausted. Yeah.
Yo,
so
I was just I'm like, yo, I wonder if my mom's got an extra room because this shit is ridiculous.
Like, it's too much, right? This shit is for the birds. But no, I'm so grateful for you having me on. I'm just like really, really happy to see where you've grown. Like, because I've been like, we've been seeing each other like literally grow up through social media and like the different, you know, you doing your YouTube. So, you know, you definitely having your life be more out there, and you know, all the things that you've been through and experienced and overcome. Mm-hmm. And it's just like to see you now here, just like tapped into this, like, you know, just a woman's woman, like just being a girl's girl and really just trying to like help other women see the beauty and the femininity and just the joy and happiness in each other and spreading that and like being real, like you're just so, and that's why I
that's
really
the most important part
with you, like
I fuck with you too.
You
that's
how
real.
I was like,
yeah,
you real, and I love that energy. I love that. But yeah,
and you're a Taurus, so it makes sense. Yeah. I love Taurus women. Yeah.
Yeah. We strong.
So I had fun. Thank you so much for
joining. Thank you, Lou.
Yes. And whoever's watching or listening, please check her out on Instagram and Floss LLC on Instagram and the website.
Yes. Thank you. floss.co. Yes.